Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Hi, this is Alan Chartok, and this is the Capital Connection. And with me is somebody with the most unique of all names in politics, Zephyr Teachout. Zephyr Teachout is a candidate for governor. Ms. Teachout is also an associate professor of law at Fordham University. Before that, she was a visiting assistant professor at Duke University, a lecturer at the University of Vermont, and a non-resident fellow at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School. Teachout completed her undergraduate studies at Yale University and holds an MA in political science and a law degree, both from Duke. In addition to the numerous legal essays and opinions she has published, Professor Teachout has also written books, including a memoir about her experience working on Howard Dean's ill-fated 2004 presidential campaign. Her latest book, Corruption in America, From Ben Franklin's Snuffbox to Citizens United, is set for a September release. Zephyr Teachout, what a pleasure to see you.
Oh, it is such a pleasure to be on.
So tell me about your name.
Well, it's sort of first name hippie, second name Dutch. Zephyr is my first name, and I was born in 1971, and my parents have given me permission to say they were hippies. Teachout is initially a Dutch name, but you know, like a lot of New Yorkers, my family background comes from all over.
How did their hippiedom, your parents' hippiedom, affect the progress of your life?
Well, that's a good question, because in a more serious way, I think the name is just a burst of creativity. But I grew up in rural Vermont and, you know, grew up with a bunch of chickens and sheep and a pig named Budweiser. I'll tell you one thing that I've been thinking about a lot recently is my dad at one point decided that he should get a bull when I was about 8 years old. And, you know, we were pretty good with the chickens and the sheep, but this was a little beyond his capacity. And the bull kept breaking through the sheep fences, trampling the neighbor's corn, getting in all kinds of trouble in the neighborhood. And I was a really fast runner. Later, I went on to win New England's and state championships as a runner. But as an 8-year-old kid, I was a really fast runner. So he realized he could use me to train this bull. So what he would have me do is go out and tickle the nose of the bull and then run as fast as I could as the bull chased me back into the fence and then climbed back outside the fence and he would close the gate.
You didn't wear red, I take it.
I didn't. But I've been thinking about that as I have been considering and deciding to run in the Democratic primary for the governor of New York.
Well, there are those of us who get phone calls from the governor's office from time to time wanting to know what we're up to. Do you ever get those calls?
No, I have not heard from him. But let me tell you, I'll tell you two things. One, look, I'm running in the Democratic primary and I want to be governor. And that's one way to win. But the other way to win is we have a governor here purporting to represent Democrats in New York. But in fact, he's basically has a trickle-down economic policy, doesn't seem to care about economic inequality, doesn't seem to care about infrastructure, doesn't seem to care about schools. And we need this governor to actually speak to the people of New York about why he has abandoned the schools and why he has abandoned the infrastructure in this state. As governor, I would spend a lot more energy focusing on just the basic job of governing, building up our infrastructure, building up our schools. And I want to have a public debate about that.
And yet, the latest polling shows him getting more and more popular. What do you make of that?
Well, he's an interesting person to run against because he often says things that people agree with. But I think when you look at his actions, he's shown that he actually serves the interests of himself, his own ambitions, and his donors. So once we actually start telling the truth, and my commitment in this campaign is to tell the truth and tell people what's actually going on in our economy and our democracy, I think we're going to see those poll numbers move quite a bit.
So give me an example of something he says as truth that you suspect is not true.
Well, Governor Cuomo's favorite broken promise is the promise to do something about corruption in Albany. He stood on the courthouse steps 4 years ago when he announced his candidacy for governor, and he said, I am going to clean up Albany. I'm going to support a different method of how campaigns are funded. This is my focus. He's had 4 years to do it, and he has never made it a priority. In fact, he took over $6 million in campaign contributions from big corporations in a loophole that 4 years ago he said he was going to close. So it's one area where he says one thing, but if you look at his actions, he's doing something else.
What about the idea of the Senate Democrats? There are more Democrats in the Senate than there are Republicans. And a lot of people think with his help, the Republicans are there. Now he's promised to change all of that. I think he could change it tomorrow if he wanted to. So the question is, what do you make of that?
Well, he calls himself an effective governor. So if he wants to show his effectiveness, then he should be effectively campaigning to make sure that Democrats have control in this state. I hope he does it, but I'll tell you that when I'm running, people who are sick and tired of the choices they have are going to come out of the woodwork and campaign and get involved. I think that just being in this campaign, and certainly if I succeed in becoming governor, we're going to see a Democratic Senate just because we're going to get all these disaffected voters who are sort of disgusted with what they see in Albany coming out.
Is it tough to get on the ballot?
Yeah, it's actually a great question because I feel like a lot of New Yorkers don't know this. In New York, you need 15,000 signatures of registered Democrats in all the different congressional districts. Now, that sounds like a good thing, and it is a good thing because it gets people out and gets people involved. In practice, it ends up being very costly, and voters should really know this. And it's costly for two reasons. One is you only have a month to do it, and the second is that everybody knows this governor is going to challenge every single signature that I gather to try to kick me off the ballot. That's just the way he operates. So, look, I wouldn't be running if I couldn't run a credible campaign, get on the ballot, and defend against every single one of those legal challenges. But people should know that there's this unfortunate, it's almost like a tax to get on the ballot because of the fear that there's going to be a lot of lawsuits for people's signatures.
So if somebody's listening to this in Rochester or Buffalo and they want to sign your petitions, is there a way to do that?
Yeah, we are actually, you know, some of my background, just to let folks know, is I've been a teacher and a scholar the last 7 years. But before that, I was the director of online organizing for Howard Dean's campaign. And I have a deep personal commitment to engaging volunteers and engaging people, not just as ATM machines, but as active citizens. So if you go to zephyrteachout.com, it's ZephyrTeachout.com.
Well, the teach out is fairly easy. Zephyr has more is more problematic.
Yeah, just think of the train or the bad car from the 70s and you're in good shape.
Zephyr.
But go there and click on volunteer, and we are setting up volunteer teams around the state to go to your local Saturday morning sidewalk and collect petitions, or you can go out and collect petitions with your neighbors. And even 10 signatures makes a difference.
Sure.
So that leads us into the money issue, into campaign finance. This governor will probably end up having $50 million to run with when he runs. That's a lot of money for a guy who says he believes in campaign finance. What do you make of $50 million, and what do you make of the system?
Well, I've never had a man spend $50 million on me before, and we'll see how that feels. But look, you know, the key thing is to be able to reach the voters, because if this campaign ends up being a campaign about which New York you want, do you want a New York with an economy that works for everyone, or do you want a New York with an economy that works for a few wealthy, well-connected people? I'm going to win. So all I need to do is actually get my message out, my experience out to the voters of this state, and I'm going to win. All we know about campaign finance is that two things we know. One is that it really corrupts the system, because if you can raise under New York system, you can basically get up to $120,000 from a single donor. So Andrew Cuomo's war chest is built from some of the wealthiest people in New York, some of the wealthiest people in the world.
Have you looked at his campaign donors to see exactly who those people are?
You know, I have to do a deeper investigation, but what you see is that a lot of his donors, you know, we've seen some corporate donors, which I talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He's got pretty hardcore Republican donors as well, who've given a lot of money, and donors with pretty specific corporate interests that aren't the interests of the people of the state of New York. But I'll tell you something. After a certain amount of money, voters get tired. If they see the same ad over and over again, they know something's up. So I have faith. If we can get our message out there, we can win.
As a fellow academic, let me ask you a question. Is there anybody leaning on you from the academic side saying, hey, this isn't helpful to have this guy angry at us?
You know, I teach constitutional law and property law at Fordham Law School, and Fordham Law School has been wonderfully supportive. My colleagues are really excited about this. We had a little social gathering of a bunch of law professors, And one of the nice things about my community is they don't have any kind of dependency or relationship with the governor where he can actually get in the way of their careers. So it's been a very positive experience with a lot of support.
So let me take you down the road of just getting a couple of your bona fides in terms of the issues. I'll name something, you tell me, okay? Campaign finance we've already done. You are for a New York City type campaign finance system.
That's right. And I just want to tell folks what that means because I think it can sound sort of, yeah. I don't know, a little bureaucratic. But basically, if you're running for office under New York's current system, it's your job to wake up in the morning and think about the richest people in the world and how you can convince them to give you $100,000. Under the system that I support, you could get basically $300 for every $50 donation. So think about what that does to you. It suddenly becomes your job to wake up in the morning and say, how many groups of 100 people can I go to? Because those people can actually fund my campaign. So it changes who you are as a politician and a person if we support this, what we call the matching fund system or fair election system.
Let's go to education and the so-called Common Core, which is on everybody's lips right now, a very high standard of things most people think would probably be good if our kids knew them. But then there's sort of other issues.
Yeah. No, I mean, the core issue with education is funding. Let's just be real about it. You know, Cuomo has abandoned public schools. He's been to a public school once in his 4 years, as far as we can tell. And one of his first acts as governor was to propose one of the largest cuts in education funding in state history. We aren't even funding at constitutional level now. And look, my first job out of Yale was as a special ed teacher's aide in a rural public school. And I will tell you, if you do not have class sizes, if you do not have small class sizes, there's a whole bunch of kids whose possibility will never be reached. If you don't have art, there are kids who go to school for art who stay around for math. So I don't just support constitutional level funding for our public schools. I think we should be aiming for the very best public schools in the nation.
And along with that goes the inevitable charter school question. As you know, Andrew Cuomo came out, addressed a huge group of people, and said that he was for charter schools, even while his colleague, if you want to use that word, Bill de Blasio, a much more progressive figure, was in the other camp. What do you make of that?
Well, I see the charter school debate as an unfortunate distraction because 94% of our kids are going in public schools. So, look, I mean, you know, there's a current cap in New York. I wouldn't support raising the cap on the number of charter schools. But our focus should be on supporting the public schools. And then we wouldn't see this fight, because the fight we see now is because there's such scarcity in funding. What troubles me about the way Governor Cuomo has approached education policy is he doesn't approach it from the perspective of somebody who's really invested in it and studied it and visited schools and talked to teachers and tried to understand the very complex thing, which is taking a small child and helping her or him become an adult. Unfortunately, it seems like his education policy is based on his donors, not on actually understanding what education.
What do you mean by that, based on his donor? Because charter school, the large charter schools are often supported by one or two millionaires in each case. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and if you look at, you know, I have to... we'll be laying out the connections here in a very specific way over the course of the campaign. But you don't have to look too far to see that some of his biggest hedge fund donors are also the ones who are encouraging him to go out and really change the conversation. We should be talking about what's happening in all the small towns and districts in this state where there just isn't the funding. You know, look, what I find really troubling is that after cutting funding, he then had the audacity to blame teachers for our failing schools.
Well, now, how do you make schools better other than the panacea of money? In other words, is there another way to do that? There are many people who think that we all know who the bad teachers are in various schools. There's a big debate now as to whether there should be a way to get rid of them. Where are you?
Yeah, I'll tell you how I broadly approach it, and then we'll be developing our education policy sort of in more detail as we go along. I think our focus should be on attracting the best people to be teachers instead of the focus being on trying to weed out the worst people.
But wait, yeah. I can't let you go. What if everybody knows that this one guy who's talks about basketball instead of teaching history, you know, in the school and never will change, has been there for a long time. It's easy to say, you know, I'm forgetting the good ones and as opposed to getting rid of the bad ones.
No, but I want to break in here because this is actually a really important deep point about something that I see in my experience in schools is that where you focus on is where you're going to go. You know, that's true in all areas of life. And I think our focus should be first on creating the conditions under which teachers, good teachers, can become great teachers, and mediocre teachers can become good teachers. And, you know, we can talk about the other stuff right now, but if you do what this current New York system does, which is tell teachers, we don't trust you, we're going to test you. You know, there's this high-stakes testing right now. I understand some of the ambitions behind Common Core and raising our standards. I think some of the ambitions behind that make sense. What I find really troubling is testing teachers on the basis of how their students do. That kind of stress in the classroom is not the kind of condition in which kids can really learn.
Well, Zephyr teacher, I have to go faster. So here's the lightning round, fracking.
Ban fracking. You know, look, I think one of the basic jobs of a government is to protect its natural resources, and we should be taking this incredible opportunity with new technologies to be building, investing in infrastructure for sustainable energy and good jobs.
So very quickly on that, do you suspect Andrew Cuomo on this? Because, you know, he has studied it, many people think, to death. I think somebody took a bite out of him, and therefore he
I'd like a straight answer from Andrew Cuomo on fracking. I think he's had the time to study it. And I'd like to hear him say very clearly that it's time to ban fracking.
Minimum wage.
You know, we're asking too little. I'd like to see a higher minimum wage, but I want more than that. I want dignity for workers. And a big part of that is addressing this concentrated power, these big giants that are taking over our economy. At the same time as we're pushing for a higher minimum wage, we also should be using the power of the state to make sure Comcast doesn't basically become, you know, the controller of a whole bunch of workers.
The medical marijuana issue, I think, is somewhat of a distraction, but it is what the reportorial core in New York has now made a number one issue. What are you thinking?
You know, I think in the short term, we should probably decriminalize small amounts of marijuana use and long term look towards, you know, it'll take a while. We want to do it in a safe way, but in the long term, look towards legalization. But that's a long term project, and I start with decriminalizing small amounts.
Have you ever smoked marijuana?
I have.
Just thought I'd ask.
It's been a while.
Get that off the table. Talk to me about this business, about this coalition, where four or five of them now, have gone over to the other side and kept the Republicans in power. What do you make of that?
You know, what I see right now is so unfortunate in Albany is that it doesn't seem to be responsive to ideas about what's best for New York. It just seems to be sort of a money game and people serving their own ambitions and moneyed interests. So what I think is that if we build the system and if enough people run who are real small D Democrats in this state, we're going to have a Democratic state. I mean, look, New York is a Democratic state.
But it's extraordinary that it's a Democratic state with a Republican Senate, even though there aren't a majority of Republican senators.
Yeah, it's just evidence that we have a broken system
right now. Do you suspect that Cuomo helped set that all up?
Look, I cannot look into Cuomo's heart, but I can tell you that he has not acted as somebody who wants to have a Democratic Senate.
Talk to me about what you would do if you were the governor about public corruption.
Well, there's two things. One is this technical fix, but critical fix that we talked about before. I just want to say one more thing on that. You know, there's 96% of Americans think there's a problem with money in politics, but 91% think there's nothing we can do about it. I know there's something we can do about it. Public financing of elections has actually changed politics in Connecticut, and it's embarrassing that New York is behind Connecticut in that.
But also New York City.
Yes, and behind New York City. The other thing that we can do about public corruption, though, is deal with this private power that's taking over. I want to be supporting small businesses. I want to be supporting family farms. That involves a whole range of issues. It involves lending policy, making sure we're actually, you know, supporting and lending to people who want to start businesses and not doing what Andrew Cuomo has done, which is say, you know, my economic development policy is tax breaks for 10 years to people who will move here. These are just tax giveaways to his friends.
Is it your sense? I mean, one of the things I always try to get to is why it is that people in public places of trust break the law. Why do they do that?
Well, there's two things that people in public trust do that are disturbing. Some of them break the law, but more often you just see a breaking of the trust itself. They may not technically be violating any bribery law or extortion law.
But some of them do.
But some of them do. But what is equally disturbing is when they wake up in the morning, they're thinking about what's best for themselves and what's best for their future ambitions instead of what's best for the state of New York. I think, you know, there's an old saying that power corrupts. And I think I sometimes see that in public officials.
How would you avoid it happening to you?
Oh, you know, I have a deep, loving family, a set of friends, community that I trust, and I trust them. I was actually just asking my best friend the other day. I said, you know, if I start getting all corrupt, will you tell me? And she said, absolutely, yes. But I have been, I'm a student of history. And I feel like I've studied corruption for the last 10 years of my life, both as a practitioner, somebody out there as an organizer, and then somebody writing about history. And I think it's really important that public officials constantly return to why they're doing it and who they're doing it for.
So are you a person of, I mean, it's clear you're a person of courage. I mean, this is a governor who doesn't like people on the other side. At least what I think I found. And so do you ever wake up in the middle of the night and say, oh, my God, what am I doing? Why am I biting the giant?
You know, sometimes I think I was built for this. You know, just in the first couple months as I've been thinking about this and doing it, I take great joy in it. I take great joy in talking to people and telling the truth. But courage is a really important value to me. There's a academic to academic, and there's a theologian, Paul Tillich.
I know him well, know his work well.
Who has been really important to me in my own thinking about who I want to be as a person. Mm-hmm. And he talks about courage as knowing when to stop thinking and start acting, and knowing when to stop acting and start thinking. And that's something I really aspire to. You know, we just had Father's Day. And when I think about Father's Day, my father was a man of great courage. And he really inspired me, and I would love to live up to what I see as his, you know, he's not a famous man, but his legacy as somebody who was always comfortable speaking truth to power and trusting in his own integrity.
And you never wake up in the middle of the night and say, oh, my God, he's going to get me.
You know, I wake up in the middle of the night to take notes about policy.
Yeah.
But look, you know, I took this decision very seriously, and for the first month, I really investigated, you know, what would happen to me if I took this person on. And I'll tell you, the fact that so many people asked me that question made me want to run even more. Because this is New York. We should not be making political decisions based on fear.
Zephyr Teachout, who's your running mate?
My running mate is Tim Wu, running for lieutenant governor against Kathy Hochul. He's an extraordinary man. He's actually invented the term net neutrality. So when you hear about the big fights between Comcast and those who want to lower your cable bills and make Comcast more open, that's Tim Wu behind it. He's also the son of two immigrants. And a really important part of what both Tim and I believe is that New York should have a truly open democracy and open economy and respect the dignity of all Americans, even if they're first or second generation Americans.
Our guest has been an amazing woman, Zephyr Teachout. She's professor at Fordham Law School, and she's running for governor. Professor, thanks so much for joining us. It's a wonderful opportunity to talk to you. I hope you'll come back.
I would love to come back. Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.